Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to ATI Financial Radio, a plain English, no-nonsense approach to personal finance. Today is Friday, June 5th, 2015, and we're continuing with part two of Common Investor Mistakes. This episode is going to ask, what's it costing you? Many investors are woefully ignorant about investment costs and have no idea what they're paying, whether it be in taxes on their investment accounts, fees, transaction costs, or commissions. And the truth is, everyone pays these costs. The question is, are you paying more than you should? We will give you some tips to keep more of your investment returns in your pocket. It's been a really busy week for Tony and his blogging. His article, Kids Can See Sports as a Lousy Investment, So Why Can't Parents?, was picked up by the nationally syndicated Christian Science Monitor. We're going to discuss this article as well as another blog that he published this week, The Best Doctor Gives the Least Medicine, which explains why doing less may be healthier for you and your portfolio. I'm Dina Isola. I'm here, obviously, with Tony Isola. Thanks again for joining us. Wow, what a busy week. I mean, you did two blogs, which are great. However, the bigger news is that NerdWallet put on the, kids see sports as a lousy investment, and then it got picked up by the Christian Science Monitor, which is really exciting stuff. Very proud of you. I think that's awesome. Were you shocked?
Yeah. I think the more you put things out there that most reasonable people can read, and if you put it in a language that they can understand, it becomes very valuable for the media to publish, because many people are interested in this topic, but the problem is it's hard to get a reliable source of information, and it's also hard to get things in a language that people could understand with examples that they can understand. So I think that's really what's needed, is more plain-spoken financial articles.
And relatable, because this is what most parents are facing.
Right, and relate things to what people already understand, and then work backwards rather than, throwing out all kinds of financial terms to people in which they have no idea what you're talking about.
Now, this article is really well written. It's got a lot of facts to back it up. From the radio blog perspective, it's going to kill a couple of birds with one stone, because we do a kids' corner every week, we do an economic statistic every week, and we cover a blog of yours every week, and this one's hitting all three of those topics, because you put in some really good statistics, I think, that most people would be surprised to hear. Frankly, I think a lot of parents are probably already feeling this way, and they don't maybe have the courage to say, hey, what am I doing running around spending all this money on sports? Is it really going to pay off? Am I really going to get a big scholarship for my child?
Yeah. I mean, you have to look at things in terms of an investment. And if you're going to get this involved in sports, it's an enormous investment in time, because that means the time you spend running around doing all this stuff is time you can't spend earning money. So that's a huge amount of money that's lost. And secondly, it costs a lot of money to participate in many of these travel leagues and tournaments and all these things, and trainers and coaches and all the things that people get nowadays. So you have to say to yourself, okay, what's the total cost of this over, 14 years or so?
And let's not forget family balance, because
right.
that
well,
is
time.
An important
there's
component.
There's a cost of time
there's,
and attention.
There's stress that gets put
Absolutely.
Into the family, and especially if one child's an athlete and maybe the other one isn't. And
right.
they're being schlepped along to tournament after tournament, and they're not being able to just have some basic good family time. I one thing that you put in that article that I thought was tremendous was you referenced that, being at a tournament on Mother's Day, which, there's certain days that really should be sacred. And, the fact that these competitions take place even when families should be enjoying themselves, there's a price to that as well.
Right.
So, but I know you really want to focus more on the nitty-gritty.
Well, I mean, it's just common
sense.
And again, there's nothing wrong with sports, and kids should play sports, and sports are great. It's just balance. That's really the word, like a portfolio. You need a balanced portfolio. But anyway, if you calculate all the money, time, and opportunity that are given up by doing all this stuff over a period of 14 years and say to yourself, well, that I did it because I want the kid to get into college and maybe get a scholarship or money from it, and you realize what you're really putting out is a lot more than you're going to get back. And again, it's math. If you just put, you know, when a child's born, if you put $3,000 a year away, which isn't a huge amount when you divide it by 12, you know, it's a little over $200 a month, and you did that for 18 years and earned a return of 7% over that time, which, by the way, is below the market average of 9 or 10%, usually over a 20-year period or so, you would end up with well over $100,000 in money that can be used, that you can use from a 529 account, which the withdrawals would be tax-free. So my whole point is, you know, there's better, you can, with a lot less money, you could achieve those same goals, still play sports, and, you know, have a more normal family life and have a lot less stress in your life. That's just the point. And the facts are the facts. And, you know, again, you see all these teams and everybody's on a travel team. It's kind of like honor roll. When everybody's on the honor roll, what's the point of the honor roll? So if everybody now is on a travel team, I don't really understand why that makes it superior, because now that's become the norm. Maybe 10% of the kids have, you know, tremendous athletic ability and they should go do a little more. But for the average kid, you know, this whole idea that it's more prestigious and this and that, but if everybody's on the travel team, it certainly dilutes the value of it. So I think when you look at it in a logical way, a lot of this just happens because people just, they heard. That's just human psychology. They follow, and that makes them comfortable. But no one, you know, sits back and says, why am I doing this? It's like, you know, the Indians used to chase the buffalo, and they chase them over a cliff, and one buffalo would run over a cliff, and they'd all follow them. It doesn't mean it's right, but the Indians understood the psychology of things. And I think a lot of people who run these sports organizations also understand that psychology.
It's a great business.
They make a lot of money from that. And, you know, that's life. If you choose
right.
to do it, you know, do what you want. I really don't care, but I'm just telling you, you need to look, you should always explore both sides and be logical in your decisions and understand why you're doing things and what's the cost. And if at the end of the day you analyze it like that and you still want to do it, then go ahead. But I really doubt most people really think about this stuff, and they just go and do it because everybody else is doing it. And that's usually not a recipe for success in anything that you do.
Well, then, of course, too, I think kids at some point, if the sport really isn't their real true passion and love, there's probably a bit of resentment at having to dedicate so much time to it, and then maybe even a bit of guilt if they want to give the sport
right.
up,
well,
because now their parents have invested time and money.
Again, you know, if you read the article, the statistics are that there are a lot less kids participating in organized sports than there were 10 years ago across the board.
Due to this intensity.
Due to this, a lot of them just want to play, and they don't want a trainer, and they don't want to travel for 8 hours to play in a game. You know, people here, they'll travel to Florida to play in a tournament, and they're playing another team from Long Island. You know, a lot of this really, when you sit back, it's insanity. So, you know, a lot of kids are like, I'd like to play, but I'd also like to have a life and do other things, and,
right.
and now they end up not playing. You know, and it's really just, I find it's gotten completely out of control.
And then, of course, you know, I always think that sometimes parents haven't thought this plan through.
Exactly.
And here's the scenario. The child gets into a college and gets money, but, of course, that's contingent upon the child being able to play and not getting injured, not being sidelined, and or being able to play and carry their grades, which can be really difficult to do because their schedule can be rigorous. And let's just say they do get money, okay, and they shave some tuition off, but maybe it's more tuition than they would have spent if they had, say, gone to a state school or a community college for a few years to get their footing. You know, then they're faced with, okay, well, now the degree is going to take them maybe 5 years or 6 years because of the travel schedule with the sport. You know, in college, they're going to take a smaller course load. So a four-year degree is now maybe going to take them 5 years or maybe even longer should they switch majors. So this quote-unquote bargain that they got maybe 20 grand shaved off a 60 grand tuition,
right,
which was probably still way above what they were comfortable spending.
Right. Now you could be paying extra.
Right.
And who knows, you know, the long-term injuries, certain sports like football and things like that. You know, there's a lot of factors to consider. All I'm saying is it's actually not surprising, though, at all, because the average person, you know, has nowhere near saved enough to retire on. The average person has, you know, a life insurance amount that's completely, you know, inconsequential to what they need. The average person, you know, misuses a credit card. So why should this be any different? But again, in some ways it's worse because now you're dealing with a child and you're, by doing this, you could be hurting the child in some ways and also hurting yourself even more in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, sports are great and everyone should play sports, but you know, very, very few people are going to go play college sports and basically, you know,
at a scholarship level.
And as far as the professional level goes, you know, then that's like getting struck by lightning. So making plans based on those types of scenarios actually coming true is really not very sensible. And your probability of success of just having a simple savings program that could be very manageable if it's done over a long period of time,
right,
it's much better. I mean, you could even start it before the child is born and you could save less than $3,000
right,
a year, right? If you figure you're going to have a kid in a few years and you started 2 or 3 years before,
right,
now you could probably save, you know, $2,000 a year or something along those lines, which again, in the big picture, is not a very big amount.
Right.
And college will be taken care of, and you could play sports. For the real reason that you should play sports is to enjoy sports and get exercise and learn how to play on a team and all the great things that sports do for people. The reason to play sports, you know, is not to go to college. I mean, I understand if you're coming from a really poor community and there's no way out, and that's, you know, that I could get. But if you're in a middle class suburban place where there's all kinds of opportunities, I think devoting all your energy as a strategy to get into school by playing sports to me just seems a little much, put it that way.
Well, I think the reason why the article was picked up so quickly by the Christian Science Monitor is because it does have this appeal. I think there are plenty of parents who actually feel this way but maybe don't have the nerve to stand alone and say, you know, this is a little out of hand. And at the bare minimum, the takeaway here is, if you want to subscribe to that train of thought where you're going to run all over creation and pay all kinds of money for your child to participate in these travel teams, at the bare minimum, set up the 529 plan and fund it with $3,200 a year and have that be your backup in case the child decides, hey, this stinks, I don't want to do this anymore, and I'm dropping out, which happens a lot
right,
of times.
Or a person gets injured.
You know,
or they get injured.
There are a lot
of things that could happen. So, like I said, it's just not a very well-thought-out plan. Let's just put it that way.
So this blog, like I said, appears on Christian Science Monitor. It's also on maliceforall.com, Tony's blog, and as well as NerdWallet. So be sure and check that out. If anyone ever wants to get on our mailing list, because every week I send out an email about the blog, Talk Radio, and then I also attach any links that go with the article, with the show, any articles or anything of relevance, by all means, email me, Dina, D-I-N-A, at atiinvestment.com. Okay, so now we're on to your second blog. You're busy, busy, busy man.
I have another one coming up, too.
Okay, well.
And it deals with people eating too much.
Okay.
And it'll be good. I think there's a lot of relationship between people's poor eating habits and investing. There really are, and it's kind of interesting. So that's in the works.
All right.
That'll come out.
So next week we'll discuss that. But for this week, another healthcare-related kind of connection to investing, on maliceforall.com, you have the best doctor gives the least medicine. And you know, why less is more. Why sometimes less is the healthier choice than...
Right. Well, I mean, many times, you know, your body will naturally heal itself, but people, you know, want instant results, and they'll
impatient,
so get me surgery because I'm too fat, or get me, you know, antibiotics, you know, because I have a cold, or all these things that in the end are going to do you more harm than good. Or if you just let time, you know, do its thing and you develop more disciplined, better habits, you would probably be a lot better off. So the whole point is, if you do too much with medicine, like over-prescribe medicine or have unnecessary operations, which unfortunately a lot of people do, the results tend not to be so good. And the same thing with investing. The more you do, usually the better chance you have of making a bad decision. So the idea is to not do too much as far as your investing portfolio goes, because, you know, there's a lot of things you can't control. So making more decisions usually ends up in a bad thing. And, you know, focusing on the things like you can control, like, you know, how much insurance you have and what skills you have and, you know, savings and budgeting and Social Security and all the things you could plot a strategy out. So it's kind of the same thing with your health. Focus on more of the things you can control, and don't look for these, you know, magic cures and all this activity that's very expensive and in the end could have very high long-term negative side effects.
You like to explain to our clients that you believe in keeping very little friction in the portfolio. And I think that many people might not even understand exactly what that means and why it's important to your portfolio, like a specific example of what friction might be.
Well,
excessive trading,
excessive,
for example,
you know,
rebalancing.
Exactly. You know, rebalancing every day or rebalancing every month.
Now, for those of you who don't know what rebalancing is, it's you have a set allocation that you agree upon with your financial advisor, and say it's you're going to have 60% stocks and 40% bonds, and within those two categories, it gets broken down further. And if that percentage gets out of whack because certain securities go up in value and certain securities go down, you adjust the portfolio back to that blend. But it's not necessary to overly work that.
No. In other words, you could probably, if it's done once or twice a year, that's more than enough, and it'll cut the cost down, you know, a great deal. And, you know, also if you have the account and it's in a taxable account, every time you sell something and you take a profit, if you held the position for less than a year, you are taxed at your regular tax rate, which for some people could be, you know, over 50% when everything's said and done. So the whole idea is to keep the friction down. In other words, the activity, because friction slows things down. So with an investing portfolio, the higher returns come with the least friction. They actually did a study at Fidelity, and they wanted to figure out who are the people that had the highest returns over, you know, the past several years in their accounts. And it turns out the people that had the highest returns were the people that actually forgot they had accounts at Fidelity.
Right, a lot of people who inherited money,
and
right?
And they left it there, and then they looked at it 10 or 15 years later, and next thing they know, they did pretty well because they didn't react to every stupid daily random movement of the market, because that's really what it is. And if you sit there and watch the market every second, the end result tends to be very bad, because you're reacting to things that are random events. There is no explanation on a daily basis. But over time, markets tend to go up, and if you stick to your plan and not do too much to change that, you'll make money. It's good habits. Same thing, you know, with your health. You're better off to have good habits than relying on all kinds of medicines and operations to cure you if that's not, you know, necessary.
Right. So less tinkering.
Absolutely.
And
with anything.
Yeah.
The less decisions you have to make, the less chance you have of making a bad decision.
Makes sense.
It's just the odds, you know.
Okay. We're going to touch on a little bit of what we covered right now in the next main topic, which is continuing with common investor mistakes. So what's it costing you? And this is, unfortunately, an area that we find clients just really I shouldn't say clients. Our clients know what they're paying. Investors who come to us think they're not paying anything or are woefully just unaware of what their investments cost, what kinds of fees are incurred, whether their person is being paid using commissions, whether or not their portfolio is tax efficient, which gets back to what we were just discussing about too much tinkering can really screw things up. So what's it costing you, and how can you figure this out, and what steps can you take to protect yourself?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing to do is, you know, you need to, whoever you're working with, you need to ask them how are they being compensated, and not only do you need to see a percentage, but you also want to see it in dollar terms, because if they say, oh, it's 3% a year, that might not sound a lot, but it could be an enormous amount of money. If you have, you know, $500,000, say, with that person, and you're paying 3%, you're paying them $15,000 a year, which is quite excessive, probably, for, you know, what they're doing. And you have to understand that even though those low percentages, it sounds low, it's actually very, very high, because if you're counting on a market return of 7% and inflation is 3%, really your real return after inflation is 4%. 7 minus 3 is 4. Now, if someone's charging you 3%, which is quite the norm in many accounts when you include the taxes, the fund fees, and all kinds of other things, commissions, and
trading costs,
loads, and you know, all the things they tack on, now you're really making 4%, but now a 3% charge on top of that means you're walking home with 1% return, which isn't going to get you anywhere, and they are taking 75% of your profit. So it's not 3%.
And
it's 75% of what you make. So if you look at it like that, this is very steep, and this is a
and you
huge
took a risk,
reason, and you're taking risk, exactly.
I mean, you could earn 1%.
But this is a big reason, too.
Without taking that kind of market risk.
I mean, they put in these 401k rules and to replace the pension system, but they put them in without educating people, which really wasn't right.
Right.
So now you have a situation where many people, you know, are underfunded for their retirement, and imagine if that 3% was back in their accounts, it would be a completely different story. So,
exactly.
You know, there a lot of rules are hopefully will be put in place in the future to start changing this. But right now, you need to be aware of what you're paying. And that's probably one of the biggest, you know, investor mistakes. And it's also because you don't get a bill.
Right.
I mean, we send out a bill because we feel that's most transparent, so you know what you're paying. But, you know, when you're really being charged excess money, It's usually the charges are much more hidden because people obviously don't want to see that. So when things are skimmed right off the top, it's very easy to overlook and make some, you know, crazy assumption that what you're getting is free, which is just, you know, absolutely, you know, insane to think that.
Now, you know, that it is sometimes really difficult to get a straight answer from an investment professional as to what a person is paying, because we've had, you know, prospective investors come in and say, we're not sure, we've asked, they've never really got a direct answer. There have been times when you've actually looked over annuity, in particular, statements to try and ascertain what someone's paying, and it's difficult.
Oh, yeah.
What tips would you give somebody? I mean, I think the obvious is if you have trouble figuring it out,
if you don't understand it,
if you can't see
it
readily, there's a problem right there. That should be like, it's almost a guarantee. If it's becoming difficult to get that an actual number, that should be a huge red flag.
Right. And if really, you know, most investments, if it's done properly, you could actually explain it to a second or third grader.
Yeah.
And they would understand it. And if someone cannot explain an investment to you in language that you can understand, that's usually a serious, serious red flag, and that's a problem. And, you know, you have to get things in writing. And, before you insist, before you invest anything, you would insist on, I want to know how much does this investment cost, how are you being compensated, and I want it in writing. And if they refuse to do that, then walk away. It's really simple, because anyone who refuses to do that is most likely seriously conflicted and overcharging you and doing things that aren't in your best interest. Anyone that would readily agree to that, obviously, has nothing to hide. So, you know, that's something you can control. But again, people, you know, don't want to look stupid and think that, you know,
or look cheap, or
they actually think, you know, paying all this money will get them more in their investment returns because,
right,
you know, people are doing all kinds of trading and, you know, which, again, it's the exact opposite. In investing, the cheapest investments are the best investments, and that has been proven. Over, it's actually even more important than your asset allocation. It's the cost of the investment. So, you know, that's just a fact. So, you know, the rest of it is just sales. And anything that you hear is just someone trying to justify the high price.
All investments come with a prospectus. And unfortunately, it's just a cumbersome document. However, there is a section in there for fees. So, you know, that's certainly a good place to start. If there's a footnote to the fees, you best read that. Any footnote is really, really relevant,
right,
we find. And sometimes the footnote muddles things and makes it confusing, indicates that it's not clear-cut.
Right.
And therefore, if someone's not really being upfront with a product cost, that is never, ever, ever a good sign.
No, and actually obviously, this is not easy. You know, we're trying to tell you these things, but to be honest, most people are not going to be able to figure this out. So the best thing to do if you're unsure is, you know, you find a fee-only financial advisor, you know, preferably a CFP, and call, make a consultation, and just say, you know what, I want to bring my portfolio in for you to review it and get an impartial in person that is qualified to look at things. And, you know, they might say things are okay, but, again, they might not. And, you know, for a very reasonable fee, you can have that done, and now you'll know. And that would be my recommendation to you because, you know, this stuff is not easy. It really isn't to figure out, and there's lots of things that go on, and people can very easily deceive you. So your best bet is to find a person that's just impartial and have them look at your stuff and you pay them an hourly fee and that's it. And it'd be money very well spent.
Also, we have to emphasize fee only here and full fair disclosure, that is our business model. That is our bias for certain, that we just feel it's the fairest way to charge. Because we don't earn commissions from other people. If you're dealing with a commission-based financial person, they're going to be inherent. The product that they're recommending has the commission built in, and in that becomes higher fees. So you'll see mutual funds with A, B, C, D. You've heard us say this time and time again, but it's very relevant. If you see those letters after your investment, the fees are definitely higher. There's much more affordable product out there that is every bit as good, possibly much better. And that is a really quick way to say whether or not you might need someone
to come and
look at your portfolio.
And to be honest, I really, you know, it should be illegal because I think, personally, it'd be like, you know, you go to a doctor and the doctor has 10 choices of medicine and he gets different commissions from each medicine. Obviously, you know, what's probably going to end up happening is going to, you know, prescribe medicine
right.
to you that might not be best for you and could actually even hurt you very much in the long term. System, you know, maybe it's okay to sell vacuum cleaners that way, but you know, for your finances and your health, it's very dangerous.
So we hope those tips will be helpful to you, especially if you take a quick look-see at your statements. It's really not a hard thing to figure out. But like I said, going to an investment professional as a unbiased third party to look
Absolutely.
It over is a really,
That's really
good
the
idea.
Best, the best way. And you could go to the CFP site. There are all kinds of resources to find people who do that.
So thank you so much for joining us this week. We hope you have a wonderful weekend and hope you join us again next week. Be well.